were able to heed all the warnings and all that, you're still going to make this.
Yeah. But there's plenty to go around.
Exactly. I've noticed, you know, it's kind of a cyclic thing.
Yeah.
You know, you may not do a lot of things your parents did with your kids, but they may grow up and do more of the things your parents did with you.
Mm-hmm. I think it's in Ezekiel. I can't remember exactly where. But there's a passage that talks to us about if you warn them and they do not listen,
right.
Their blood's on their
right.
head. If you don't warn them
yeah.
and they don't listen, the blood is on both of your heads.
Right.
So as parents, if we are not still correcting and teaching and instructing, maybe is a better word,
right.
then, you know, we are somewhat responsible. Mm-hmm. We can't just say, oh, well, they're grown now.
Right.
I'm not responsible.
Nothing
for
I
that.
Can do. Yeah.
You know, we still have to try.
No,
and
I'm,
if
I'm,
they don't listen, then it's their fault.
I am completely convinced through that passage and others that at the judgment day, the Lord will want to know what I did for my children. All the way through to the end of my life, what did I do that was helpful, beneficial, instructive to my children? And that's whether the kids like it or not.
One more thing. That's what I've always told my kids. I'm doing my job. This is my job God gave to me. So quit rolling your eyes and just listen. You know, I'm doing my job. And, you know,
and your job
and
is to listen.
It's your choice to do your job.
Yeah. So let's go back and we'll talk about younger children here. It's talking about a lot of times parents hesitate to correct in public because, you know, they're embarrassed the way their child's acting and they don't want to draw attention to it. Well, little do they know the attention's there.
Mm-hmm.
What people are watching is to see how they're going to react, what they're going to do. And doing something in today's world could do one of two things. It could get a call to the authorities, or you could get a rousing cheer, depending on where you are. But the point is that if you let the little manipulator figure out this is public, she won't do anything, you're doomed. You're doomed. And that child has to know that the standards are the same, whether we're here or there or there, and you're going to be held accountable no matter where we are. And, you know, that you don't get to pick and choose. You don't get to act this way just because you're out in public. I had the grandkids with me, you know, Sunday night. And several people were very kind and said how good they were and how well they behaved. And they were pretty good. They were up and down a lot. But overall, they were pretty good. But they're not pretty good by happenstance. They're pretty good because they go to services 3 times a week and they're taught, you know, they know what they're supposed to do. Whether or not they do it every time is another question. But they understand what the standard is. And it's not different just because they're out in public. You know, if they don't do what they're supposed to do, their parents are going to take care of it. So, you can't, and I've seen people do that. The kid, and all of you have, the kid in the grocery store who wants this. Please, 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 please. Then kicking, screaming, all those things. And finally the parent gives in because they're out in public. Maybe they give in because that's who they are. Maybe they give in at home too. How has that helped the child? Are there any, first of all, what are the cons in that situation? If we were doing pros and cons and you've got a kid screaming and crying and pitching a fit and you give them whatever they want.
What kind of person are you sending to a school teacher?
Okay.
Bible school.
What
teacher.
Kind of person are you sending to somebody else to deal with? Laura?
I was going
to
say, he just won.
He won?
Yes.
And what does that do?
He knows that he has the upper authority over you.
Sets up a power struggle right there.
And when they continually win these kinds of battles, they grow up into adults who have no respect for authority.
Right.
And if they have no respect for you or other authority, they have no respect for themselves, mm-hmm. which means they end up these menaces to society, like that guy that shot everybody up in Connecticut not that long ago. My suspicion is his problems started when he was this big.
Often.
You know, I've heard some of the men that stand in the auditorium, you know, at the front there, see that nobody comes in with a shotgun or whatever. And they talk about certain children that in and out, in and out. That is so wrong. Well, do you remember ever getting up and going out?
Not voluntarily.
I like that.
If you take a child to the restroom in between the Bible class and services, in all likelihood, he can hold till church is over.
Well, and I think maybe something that's lost a little bit over, that has been lost over time, is the ability of all of us to think of all these children as ours and to be helpful to them if we see something they are doing that they shouldn't be doing. I remember very well being at a meeting at Castleberry when I was about 12. Old enough to go sit with friends, but still. And I sat with a couple of friends. And even to this day, looking back on it, I didn't think we were misbehaving. But the guy behind me after church tapped my shoulder. I didn't know who this man was. He said, "You need to sit with your parents. You girls don't know how to behave." I really don't remember what we were doing, but whatever we were doing, he saw it. He wasn't mean. He just said, "You're not old enough to do this. You're not responsible enough to be up here by yourselves." And it stuck in my head because it was a long time ago.
Thank him. Or me.
So, you know, and I don't mean we should... It's not our role to punish other people's children to do that. But I do think it's our role to point things out if we see them, and we do it like that gentleman did. He was firm, but he wasn't mean. He didn't say, "You're a terrible person." He just said, "You're not old enough to sit up here. You need to get back with your mother." And I think sometimes we see a child doing something that obviously they shouldn't be doing, and we hesitate to say, "Why don't you ask your mom if you should do that?" Or just something to change the...
That makes me wonder where your mother was, though.
I was sitting up front. You were back there. You couldn't see me. He could. He was right behind me. And I still don't know what we were doing. I really, even at the time, was kind of baffled.
Well, and we can't be with our kids, especially if you have four, every single second.
Yeah.
And I always appreciated someone helping
me.
Me
too.
You know, and I hope the same way when I make corrections, which I've done, that it's taken the same way.
Right. The Rollins and our family were very close while the kids were growing up, and we traveled together, and the kids were living in each other's house about as much, you know. But Brian was about 5, and he went home to his mother one day and said, "Can somebody else spank you? Can somebody else's mother spank you?" And she said, "Did Jean spank you?" "No, she said she was going to." I would have if he hadn't stopped what he was doing. Unfortunately, Vicki said, "Yeah, she can," because you weren't minding. But as you said, Amy, on the next page, it's talking about it's to everybody's advantage, the child's, the parents, the community, for every person in a society to learn respect for authority. Society is built on a system of authority. It's called anarchy if you don't have that. And nothing works. I think we have to be careful to teach our children that there is some authority that we cannot obey. That God's authority is first. And if something comes into conflict with that, we can't do it. And kids sometimes have to take that stand in school in science class. They're teaching evolution. A child sometimes has to be able to say, "I don't believe that. That's not what God says." Now, you have to teach them to do it respectfully, you know, and not be obnoxious to the adult in charge. But that's a time when we have to say, yes, they have authority over the school, but what they're teaching is wrong, and you have to respect God's authority. That's a tough thing if you're, you know, 12 or 13 years old. But it happens a lot. A child's reaction, as you said, Amy, to his parents' authority is kind of a preview of how he'll be to all authority, including God's. The Deuteronomy verse here talks about if a child is disobedient to parents, what happens?
Stoned
to death. Now that is so far out of my imagining that I can't even go there. How do you as a parent turn your child over to be be killed.
If you didn't, you were stoned.
I know, but I'm still saying it's. I understand the law. I understand that they obeyed the law. I don't know how.
I think that just shows the seriousness of probably how they took the time to raise their children properly in the first place.
So it didn't happen. Remember when God told Moses he wouldn't be allowed to enter the promised land? It was because of that one little disobedience, remember? And despite his pleading, God held firm. I think that's one of the most interesting verses in the Bible. Say no more of this. It's like when parents finally go, enough. Stop. I'm done. You're done. It's decided. No more. God didn't change his mind after that. Now, we have other examples of God relenting when he said something, even when a human asked him to. So it's not an impossible thing to change your mind with your child. There's a big, big difference between caving into them and changing your mind on a situation. No, you cannot spend the night with your friend in 2 weeks because you've done this and this and this and that's all. That's the punishment. Well, maybe over the 2 weeks period, you've seen a true change in behavior, a true penitent attitude. And the child says to you, I'm not trying to buy my way out, but I am telling you that I understand what you said. And maybe they don't use those words. But those kinds of things might cause you to relent and say, well, because of these changes in behavior, because of what you told me, I'm going to let you do that. But it's a difference from the child over the 2 week period going, please, 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 I just can't miss that. I'll just die if I miss that. Blah, 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 blah. You know, that just makes me go to 4 weeks. I just can't stand that stuff. So, big difference between caving and changing your mind with a reason. But I think it's very, very important that the child knows the difference. You know, I'm not doing this because you whined at me. I'm doing this because this happened, this happened, this happened. And if it doesn't continue to happen, we're back where we started. And you're back where you started. To effectively discipline a child, a mother with much self-discipline of her own, for once to say, if you do that one more time, you have to be prepared to get up and follow through. Takes a lot more love to say no than to give in. Amy had an interesting little twist on that whole 1-2-3 thing that people do, which she absolutely does not do. Cole did we thought we knew what he did. All of a sudden Levi was crying, so we were pretty sure there was some connection there. And she said, what did you do to your brother? And he went and hid. And she said, one spanking. And so like two was going to be the second spanking, and he came out immediately. It wasn't the come out on three. It was, you're already done one, and here's what's going to happen next. I thought that was an interesting twist. I hadn't seen that before. But he came right out.
He had seen it before.
He had seen it before. He knew what it meant. Talks about Viva La Generation Gap. And I think basically what it's saying is, you know, we are the adults. We are the adults. We're not. My children had plenty of friends. They did not need me to be their friend. They needed me to be their mother. And trying to be on the level of the child doesn't do anybody any good. It doesn't help you grow as a parent, and it doesn't help them grow in wisdom and understanding. Should I tell a bad story on Randy? Sure. I should. Randy's my ex-husband. No, it doesn't involve you. When Kate was very small, Kate wanted to wear makeup from the time she understood that makeup existed. From the time she was little, she wanted to wear makeup. I don't know why, because as y'all know, I'm not very big on makeup. It didn't matter much to me. But she wanted to, and it was always, no, you're too young. And well, Randy and I divorced when she was 7. So she was in 5th grade, and she wanted to wear makeup. 5th grade, still too young to wear makeup, in my opinion. But he called me. Kate wants to wear makeup. Yeah, I know. Well, why can't she wear makeup? She's too young. And he said to me, all her friends do. what? I said, you know, I expected that excuse from the 12-year-old. I didn't expect it from the 42-year-old. That's the surprising thing. So whatever her friends do, that's a good standard for how our child behaves. And I told him, I said, here's the thing. By the time these girls graduate from high school, some of their friends will be on drugs, and some of them will have had a baby, and some of them will be living with their boyfriends and whatever. And so I'm trying to make sure it's not them, not those two kids. But to do, but he wanted to be their friend. He had a lot of guilt about leaving, and if he could be their friend, then it would be better for him somehow. And I said, well, it won't be better for you to be their pal. They need a dad. And it's not good enough to think on a child's level. And that means sometimes we do some things they don't like. And sometimes we're wrong. I can think of a few things that I felt strongly about, felt like they shouldn't do, and looking back on it, I wish I hadn't done that. I wish I hadn't taken that particular stand on that thing. It wasn't important enough. But I don't guess you can be perfect while you're doing it. I guess you can just try the best you know how. But they need people who have more wisdom and understanding to guide them. They don't know. They're just children. And if we try to jump down to their level and be children with them, then everybody's lost. So when your child looks at you and says, I hate you, well, some of them do for the moment.
When mine said that to me, I said, you don't have to like me, but yeah, you do have to obey.
Right, right.
I can handle it. You don't like them. That's fine, but you still have to obey.
And I've told mine at various times, if my doing what's best for you means you dislike me, then that's just the burden I'll have to bear. Because I still have to do what's best for you, no matter what your reaction is.
Erica next, never said that, by the way.
No, Erica never said that. She wants me to clarify that. It says God never took time to make a nobody. I think it would be a rare person who is a Christian who would think that there's a person without worth. However, I've spent a whole lot of time working with children of poverty, and I assure you that some of those kids have been told over and over that they are of no value, that they have no worth. And if you don't think you're worth anything, then you don't need to follow the rules, because what does it matter? You know, you're already nothing.
I saw that little sign one time. I thought it was really sweet. I know I'm somebody because God doesn't make no junk.
God doesn't make no junk, yeah.
That was Velma Stanley.
Is that right?
Yeah. She used to say that to her.
Yeah. I'm working on a project with my friend, and one of the things we're talking about is a positive environment in the early childhood classroom. And you actually have to remind people, because we're people and we get busy, to smile. We've been known to put mirrors up at teacher level, eye level, so they can see what their face looks like. Because when you're busy, you're involved, sometimes you get that look that looks like, leave me alone, don't bother me, don't talk to me. And little kids especially need to feel that you're open to them. And I think this is maybe one of the biggest challenges that faces a stay-home mommy, because you get busy. There's a lot of... So all these people that say, what will you do with your time? They've never done it, so they don't know. But you get really, really busy, and it is easy to push the children aside for a moment, but 27 moments, 127 moments during the day. And so what does that say to a child if you're always too busy?
I don't care about you.
I don't care about you. You're not worth caring about. And you're talking, and I think it's very easy for us to be disrespectful of children. We don't mean to be, but we're the people in authority. And so we're talking to our child, and somebody comes in and interrupts, and we just leave that. We just turn around and don't finish our conversation with our child.
I'm guilty.
And yet, if the opposite is true, if we're talking to an adult and the child comes and interrupts, we make them wait. Now, don't misunderstand. I'm not saying we ignore the adult and spend another 15 minutes with the child. But we can at least treat them with the same respect we would treat an adult. We can say, we have to stop our conversation for a minute. Will you hold that thought? I've got to see to this. I'll come back. And then you do. You do come back. It's a big thing that I preach all the time in the early childhood classrooms that I'm in, that we don't treat children with respect. I've seen so many teachers getting kids ready to go outside, and they get their coat out of the cubby, and they come around behind them, and they just start pulling their arms back and sticking them in the coat instead of saying, hey, Jordan, it's time to put a coat on. I mean, you've got a kid that doesn't know you're back there, and you're grabbing their arm. It's not respectful of them as a person. And I think part of what we can do to improve the communication with our children is always remember that they're people. They're not just our kids. They're people with their own personalities, their own lives. We have a lot of control, and should, but we can offer those pieces of respect that make them feel worthy and make them feel like they're an important person and important to us. Erica?
Well, obviously I don't have kids, but...
And we're very happy about that at this point.
I'm being a manager where I work, I often have to... I'm often, like, being the one in charge, I have to tell everyone, you know, how to stay on task and stuff. And right now, I've been reading a lot of books on leadership to try to be that manager that they, like, feel more comfortable with. And I want to help all our managers improve because I'm tired of everyone coming to me. So I'm trying to build up our thing, but with that, I'm having trouble with the kids who just don't care. And I'm trying to find a way of listening to them enough to help them and also, like, let them know that I'm not just going to make a decision and not care about them. I want them to... with my study, I've realized that they also need to be sharing with the management what they want to see come out of the store, what their image is of the store, and what they want. Because if we all get on the same page and find an image that's perfect for all of us, which is possible, as long as we all communicate with each other, we can all be, working harder to strive to have that.
I think anytime you're in a group setting of any kind, families, work, Bible class, we all have to feel like we have input, that we have a part of it. If it all belongs to somebody else, then why should I care? You know, I used to have a boss who, her favorite little phrase was, let's look this over, I'm not married to this. But she was. And eventually, after much talk, we would do what she said because that's what it was going to be. Well, you can see where the hour and a half in between of the meeting just made you want to go away because it didn't matter. You could have all the input you wanted that she wasn't going to listen to. We were still going to do exactly what she said when she first came in. I had a friend who said to me, I so wanted to say to her, you know what? You are married to it. Let's do it your way. Let's move on. We got other work to do. So it's really, really important to have people have input. But you have to have input that has meaning. If you say to your child, let's decide what we're going to do today, I would suggest that you have three choices set out there. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself doing something you really don't want to do at all. But to have input that has no value just makes people quit listening. So you're exactly right to have your employees have input into that image, into what they want. It's really important, and it's good that you have a management team that will listen, that will take that under consideration. Now, that means still sometimes that the management team says, or the parents, no, sorry, I understand you want to do that, but that's not going to work. It's not what we're going to do. But the communication is still there, that you've said this, I've heard you, here's why it won't work. You know, here's the reason behind my having to make this other decision. And then people can feel like what they said was valuable and that you heard them and it wasn't a waste of their time, even if they didn't get the outcome they wanted.
I've had to do that with my kids. You know, we have family meetings regarding one thing or another,
And, you know, I always listen to what they have to say, but I tell them sometimes I can't change what I'm doing. Even right. though I feel for you and I'm sorry that you feel this way,
right.
it has to be this way. And you're going to have to trust me, you right. know, that this is why.
This is the reason, and sometimes we have to do it that way. So when you can allow, especially children, choices, when you can allow that input, it builds a trust for the times when you have to say, sorry, can't do it. We're going to do it this way. And sometimes you have to say, we're going to do it this way because I'm the adult and I know that this is going to be better, even if you don't understand. But if you've built that respect over time and the fact that they know that sometimes you do hear what they say, it's going to make a huge difference in the way it's accepted. Throw out those dry bones. I don't know if that was kind of a funny title. The whining, clamoring, clanking people who are never happy, who always are critical, no matter what you... I think the very worst thing we can do as Christians... No, it's not the very worst. One of the really bad things we can do as Christians is to get in the car after church and all the way home criticize the preacher or the people who are sitting in the pew in front of us or the way the elders took on so-and-so or... If, as adults, you need to have this conversation together, mom and dad, don't do it in front of the kids. Now, again, that's not to say we have to leave the impression that everybody's perfect. I don't think it's wrong to say sometimes to children, I know, brother so-and-so did this, and I wish he hadn't, and, you know, maybe that won't happen. Because we can't pretend we're all perfect. But I'm telling you, if the weekly plate on the way home from church is criticism, how do you think that's building and encouraging your children to be Christians, to be a part of the congregation, to be in love with their brothers and sisters? Now, if there's doctrine that's wrong, yeah, we talk about that. We talk about it openly. But we better be going to the person that's teaching the wrong doctrine, not just griping about it on the way home. But haven't y'all been around people who do that? Oh, that sermon was too long and it was hot and it was blah, 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 blah. And the message the kids hear is, why did we go? What was the point? Is it hard to be cheerful sometimes? Yeah, don't feel good. Or it was too hot in the building, which it was. Sunday night, I just thought I was going to roll over and die. And Patsy's over there just fanning as hard as she can go. But the air of criticism should not be what we come out with, what we feel. And it shouldn't be there in getting ready. Oh, I can't believe we're going to church. I'm so tired. Kids hear it.
They feel it.
That's right. Even if you don't say it out loud. Laura, were you going to say something?
I was going to say, there was a person, they're no longer here or whatever, but they were always criticizing. And it was a person who I believe kind of walked about causing some strife or whatever, but finally I looked at them one time, and they were talking about, it was a man, and this person made the comment about women. He says, oh, I don't know if I could ever have any of these women as my wife. And I said, well, you'd have to look at it, would any of them have you as their husband? And they looked at me, and I said, if you were the only Christian that I ever knew, I would never become one. And he said, why? And I said, because you're one of the most depressing people I've ever met. And he was so surprised by that.
Yeah.
But he was always negative. There was no hope in him.
Right.
It was just negative all the time.
Well,
and that's what I heard, even, you know.
And our human nature is to eventually get away from people like that. Because I think most of us have an innate desire to be joyful. And when somebody is constantly poking at that, you just want to go, okay, I'm out of here. I can't do this anymore. And there's lots in the scripture about being joyful. I may have told this story. I'm going to tell it again. I went to Abilene Christian College at the time for one semester. I didn't like Abilene Christian College at all, and I came home. But in our dorm, on Sunday mornings, as far as I could tell on the floors I was on, I was the only one getting up going to church. It was very deadly quiet on Sunday morning in the dorm at ACC. But on Friday nights, they would have these dorm devos. And the girls would go down in the living room and they'd read scripture and sing and cry. They cried all the time. And I went to a couple and decided I wasn't going to do that anymore. I was kind of annoyed with them anyway because they weren't getting up going to church. And they would come to my door and ask me to come down to Devo. And I go, no, I don't want to. But why? And I finally said, you people cry all the time. As far as I can tell from scripture, Christians are supposed to be the happiest people on the face of the earth. We have the hope that no one else has. But you people cry every time you get together and I don't like it and I'm not coming. Don't ask me again. And they didn't. But, you know, it was that teenage emotion. I felt it was very hypocritical. They were going to show each other how much the Lord meant to them. And it was going to touch their hearts and they were going to cry. But they weren't getting out of bed Sunday morning to go to church. That was what I kept seeing. And one friend was sneaking out the window to go spend the night with her boyfriend on Friday night. And, you know, it was just, it was what you would expect, sadly, of any group of teenagers that you put together. There didn't appear to be a difference because these people called themselves Christians.
May I tell the class why you went to ACC?
Yeah.
We had sent one child to Texas, University of Texas in Austin. And we almost lost him there. And we thought, well, we'll try this. There was no college here for us to go to. And so she chose.
He gave me a scholarship.
Yeah, she had a scholarship. But anyway, that's why she went there to start with.
I did like chapel. They'd go to chapel
the
every morning.
Was beautiful.
3,000 people singing a cappella. It was great. I loved chapel. All my friends were cut in chapel. It was required. They said they had cameras and they checked who was in their seats. I don't know if that was true or not. But it was a required event, chapel every morning. And all of my friends cut chapel. I went every time. That was my favorite part of being at ACC. Anyway, I came home and had a member of the church say to me, I can't believe you're going to leave that Christian environment and go to that worldly Texas Tech. I said, well, at least at Texas Tech, I know what I'm dealing with. They're going to tell me straight out what they're doing. And I don't have to worry about the hypocrisy. So that's my rant. This paragraph talks about humility. I think teaching humility is a hard thing. I don't know that you can teach it outright, like I'm trying to teach a class. I don't think you can do that. I think you can only show humility. Show it in action.
I think one of the best ways parents do that is by admitting when they make a mistake to their
Absolutely.
Father, apologizing. And growing up, I can't remember my mother ever doing that. And I'm not bad-mouthing my mother. I love her to death. We're super close, so I would never say this even in front of her. But she didn't do that. And we grew up thinking that she thought she was perfect.
Yeah.
And she would make mistakes, and she would falsely accuse us, or she would say something, and she would never apologize. And so when I grew up, I said, I'm never doing that.
Yeah.
And if I make a mistake, I want to tell my children. Well, I overdid it. So then I had to, when they
Back
hit the teen years,
bit.
I had to say, okay, I'm not always wrong.
Stop
it. So, you know, you can overdo a good thing. But, you know, it got to the point where sometimes they didn't have respect in the teen years because I had over-humiliated myself.
Yeah.
So we have to balance that.
We do have to balance it. But I agree that one of the best things you can do is acknowledge when you've made a mistake. And I know that there have been more times, probably since my children have been adults, that I've gone to them and said, I wish I hadn't done this. And, you know, when we've talked about some of those things. But, yeah, you have to acknowledge when you've done something wrong, because you have to acknowledge when you've done something wrong because God said so. We have an obligation as Christians to acknowledge our error, ask for forgiveness of it, and change our ways. You can't just say, I'm sorry, and go do it again. I think one of my biggest failings, and I worked really hard to get past it, I hope I am, is I would say, you made me so mad that I... No. They didn't make me do anything. I chose to react in such a way. But it's not the child's fault that I reacted this way. Their fault that they did something wrong. But my reaction is my choice. And I can't blame that on someone else. And I think that's a really important lesson to learn because it holds throughout life. You made me go drinking because I was out with you and you made me feel bad, blah, blah, blah. No. They tempted someone, perhaps, but they didn't make them engage in that behavior.
But we have to be careful, too, because, you know, I've had my children say to me, well, God never screamed at his people. I said, that's wrong.
Yes, he did.
Haven't you read the scriptures where it says his voice was like thunder and the ground shook?
Yeah.
God got mad.
And I don't have the ability to make the earth open up and swallow you.
Exactly.
But he did. Does. No. I don't think any kid more than once should be able to get away with saying, God never treated his children this way. Oh, I can show you so many, many disciplinary things that the Lord did. Yeah. Being a mother takes a lot of time, takes a lot of concentration, takes a lot of fortitude and want to and defense in the world. Because there will be people who say, I can't believe you don't do anything. Really?
Spend a day with me.
Yeah, come on. Let me show you what it is. But there are people who react that way to motherhood. I had a master's before Clay was born, and I had a lot of people say to me, I can't believe you're going to waste your education by staying home with your child. And a couple of times I said, well, I don't think I am, but I'd rather waste the education than the baby. So, but in today's world, when it is looked at that women will work outside the home, that's just given. That's the norm. And will put their children in the care of someone else. You have to defend yourself. And to be able to do that well, I think you have to feel it inside you. You have to know that it's what you want to do. It's the right thing to do for your child.
Right. Jimmy said to me, for those who don't know, Jimmy is my oldest, but he said to me a few years ago, he said, we were talking about careers, and he said, Mom, I'm so sorry that you had to sacrifice your career. And I stopped him immediately, and I said, oh, no, Jimmy. If I've learned anything, the sacrifice would have been if I would have chose the career.
Yeah.
I said, because you just, the blessings are just my cup overflowed.
Yeah.
I mean, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, not that a career is wrong, but it's like the blessings that I have received from watching my children go are just...
Well, I had to go back to work before I wanted to because Randy left and I had to feed the kids. But at various times after that, the kids had to go in daycare for short periods of time when something would be going on. And they hated it. And to this day, they'll tell you, thank you for not working. Thank you for not making me be in daycare because it was awful. And I don't think that they were beaten or anything. They just weren't home. They just weren't home. And
I was going to say on the same thing, Michelle, a friend or whatever, she was in the same situation. She had to go to work because of the situation with her husband or whatever. But she is counting down the days to retirement. She retires in a few years. And I said, do you really want to retire? And she said, oh, yes. She said, and it was a nice compliment. She said, I see you do things, and I want to be able to do these things. And I said, what do you see? And she goes, oh, just going and doing this. And she sees things in the church. She goes, I don't get to do those things. So she sees that as something she's missing out on, and I'm glad.
Now, I think we have plenty of scripture that tell us it's not wrong for a woman to work. That's not my position. Part of mine is I've just spent too many years in early childhood and gone to too many daycare centers. And I know what they are. I know what even the good ones are. And I look at these babies that are showing up at the door, and I know they got up at 5:30 and got poked into clothes and had maybe some breakfast and put in the car to get there at 6:30 when mom has to drop them off so she can go to work. I mean, I've seen too many of it over 25 years. So it's just... it's not that they're bad places to be. It just makes it harder, I think, on very young children to do that.
Well, you have to know it's harder because here's a woman teaching or working in the daycare that has 16 to 20 children.
Yeah.
At home, mother has one-on-one, so it has to be.
Or three-on-one, but not 16.
Yeah. throw the other two out.
Well, you could. Yours are far enough apart. So it's a commitment. It's a decision. It's a choice. And we are so grateful to live in a country where we really, actually, most of us have choices, have the choice to do it. Like I said, I'm not going to say it's wrong for a woman to go to work. I would hope that most mothers of young children would see the value in letting their child be at home. Certainly with the population I've worked with over the years, there are homes that it's better the child's in Head Start than at home with a crackhead mom.
I like this paragraph about the dandelions and popcorn, because I guess because out of all the mistakes I've made, this was something I did do right. I did spend a lot of time with them and played with them. But when I was a child, the part about the bragging on the fistful of dandelions reminds me of when I was a child, I loved to do hair. I mean, I should have realized that was my career path from early on, but I loved to do hair. Nothing delighted me more than to decorate someone's hair. And I would do my older sister's hair. They had long, beautiful hair, and I'd put all these barrettes in it and make it look absolutely gorgeous in my mind. And they immediately took it out.
Aww.
And that devastated me. So when my children decorated my hair, I wore it out in public. And, you know, people were surprised that I did that. And I said, you know, they took the time to do my hair, and I think it looks beautiful. You know, and people would be like,
it's hair. You know, it'll change.
They know it wasn't how I usually wore it.
Well, I'll tell one quick story that we're over time, but when my kids were little, I used to make, back when you could take food into the school without everybody thinking you were trying to poison the whole class, I would make gingerbread cookies at Christmas, and we would paint them with royal frosting, and I would take 3 cookies for each child. They hung one on their tree, they ate one, they took one home. And I had 3 kids. A lot of cookies.
All over the kitchen.
Yeah, everywhere. And I'm not crazy about rolling and cutting cookies. That's one of my least favorite things. But when Clay got into 7th grade, I thought, okay, good. He'll be finished. He came home and said, Mom, we can do cookies in art class. So I did all these cookies, went to art class, and this little girl came up to me. She was taller than me already at 7th grade, put her arm around me and said, I decorated cookies with you in kindergarten.
Aww.
Traditions are worth it. Because it's things they take with them, and I'm happy to report that Amy made cookies this year and invited people over, and the kids painted cookies. So those little things that they hold, I'm talking too much, but Susan posted, she's been sick, and she posted on Facebook that she was remembering Sunday evenings, if she was sick, Daddy would stay home with her and make chocolate peanut butter fudge. Now, that's not most people's cure, but it was Daddy's. Or a root beer float. The man was a pure genius. So, you know, if you're sick, you got chocolate peanut butter fudge.
And the grandkids still ask for those floats.
Root beer floats, yeah. Anyway, I ran over a little, I'm sorry, but we're almost finished with this chapter. We'll finish it next time. Let's talk briefly about Margaret. Jade is taking food on Friday. Somebody was supposed to take today. Jade's taking on Friday. So we're finished through this week.
Monday when I was over there, she said she had been to the doctor, and they did an EKG, and evidently it wasn't exactly normal. So she wasn't sure at that time if she was going to have the surgery tomorrow.
Okay.
So whoever goes today could find out.
Okay. Check with her. So maybe if you could check with her, you could let us know tonight if we need to get food ready for next week. Okay. How's she doing? Do we need to do food anyway, surgery or not?
Well, I had told her that it was scheduled through Friday, and then after she had it, we would check with her.
Okay.
And Kenneth went yesterday, not Monday, so I don't know how his...
Okay. So, Bonnie, you'll be our messenger for tonight.
But she sounded real good.
Good.
I mean, she had some pain, but it's... I guess she's getting adjusted to that,
Laura.
When I brought her food, I had made her some chicken soup. And just in case anybody's bringing her food or whatever, even if you don't cook it, you pick it up. She really liked the soup, because she said when she hadn't been feeling good, it was something easy that she could make and stuff. So just in case anybody's bringing her.
All right, well, we'll wait here for Bonnie and then we'll know what we need to do. Thank you, ladies.